Carlos Correa, who has been very outspoken, like he's been speaking a lot, and he didn't allow Carlos Beltran to take the heat last week. He's like, we're all big boys. We all knew what we were doing.
Yeah.
And he was asked about the Altuve, you know, wearing a buzzer after he hit that home run in the ALCS. And originally it was believed, because Altuve said it to Ken Rosenthal right after he hit the home run, that he didn't want his shirt taken off because his wife didn't want that to happen anymore.
And by the way, that comment has everyone in the big leagues just beside themselves. They're like, that's a walk-off to go to the World Series and you don't want your jersey to be taken off? Get serious,
everyone,
man.
Everyone is saying the same. You could take off every piece of clothing I have.
Aroldis Chapman.
He could do the Ned Braden.
You take him right yards to go to the World Series, and you don't want... You go right to the dugout?
No chance. Everyone knows what was going on. I mean, let's not play foolish here.
Yeah.
But Correa decided to add a different chapter to the bogus explanation. Here's what he said over the weekend.
His wife told my wife, why is Carlos ripping out to his shirt? Like, I don't like that. I don't like that. So when he's walking, so he's running from third base to home plate, I'm the guy up front. I'm the guy up front, the first one waiting for him. He's like, don't take my shirt off. The second reason that he don't want me to talk about this, but I'm going to say it, is because he got an unfinished tattoo on his collarbone right here that honestly looked terrible. It was a bad tattoo. And he didn't want nobody to see it. He didn't want to show it at all.
That's ridiculous.
Ridiculous. Credit to the guys in the scrum and the girls in the scrum. You notice no one gave him the chuckle after. It's like, and to be honest, it looks terrible. Like, he was looking for, like, some laughs from
reaction.
The crew. And none of the men or women down there were, like, smiling or laughing. They're like, all right, let's continue with this bogus
It's ridiculous.
Explanation.
And if I'm Altuve, I'm not even happy with that. Just be quiet and don't make up stupid stories.
Well, here's
then he's going to have to defend it.
Yeah, apparently he took his shirt off today, which now he can take his shirt off, and was walking around. And
well, how's his tattoo?
He had a tattoo. I guarantee it was like a taped-on tattoo.
With a Sharpie.
Yeah. Here's our baseball analyst, Steve Phillips. What do you make of Correa's explanation over the weekend?
Well, I think that he was defending his guy. Now, you know, I remember watching the home run and seeing the interview after the game, when he talked about that, you know, he had his jersey ripped off once before. His wife didn't like it, and so he didn't want it taken off. And you know, so there's so many things here that make you feel like you're not getting the whole story. But, you know, the what the commissioner said was that we interviewed over 70 different people, sometimes multiple times. We got to the bottom of what we truly think is the story. And do we ever know anything 100%? Probably not. But he said he found it hard to believe that the players would completely all tell the same story about 2017, all tell the same story about 2018, and then the idea that they would lie about 2019. And so there doesn't seem to be any evidence of buzzers or anything like that going on, and that there's nobody whose story disagreed with everybody else. So, you know, whatever the explanation was, which is, you know, that when you give about four different, you know, suggestions as to why maybe he didn't rip the jersey off, it seems suspicious. But I think that when they interviewed and they had an immunity and nobody said anything about 2019, I don't know what to think about that. To me, it makes me think that maybe nothing happened in 2019, even though the explanation seems a little bit fishy.
Yeah, Manfred also said, I can't definitively say they weren't wearing buzzards.
Yeah,
so.
He just said, do I ever know anything 100%? No, but
right.
He said, I do, you know, he said, what I do believe is they all said the same thing about 2017, they all said the same thing about 2018, and they all said the same thing about 2019, and he doesn't know how they'd all get their story straight about 2019 and when everything else corroborated the years before. So, who knows? And in the end, I don't know that it changes the story. I mean, their 2017 World Series tainted. Their reputations are tainted. And so now we got to try to figure out how to move forward, and so this never happens again.
Steve, we had a baseball executive on earlier in the show, and he said he thinks that Manfred has done an excellent job at handling this, even his PR work. Do you agree with that statement?
Well, so here's the thing. Like, on my radio show on MLB Network Radio, like, we're getting calls. People are killing Rob Manfred because they think the players should have been suspended.
Of course.
But here's the thing. It wasn't realistic. It wasn't possible. Because here's where he was, is that he could have not offered immunity to anybody, and players would have clammed up and not answered. Maybe one or two guys would have spoken. But even if that had happened, and even if he decided, you know, I'm going to suspend this guy and that guy, they would have, a grievance would have been filed, and they would have lost the grievance, because the one thing that was really clear and everybody agreed is that the letter that went from Rob Manfred to all 30 general managers and owners, by the way, did not make its way from the general manager to the clubhouse. That nobody, and so the explanation for the player would be like, what are you talking about? Nobody told us anything. Nobody said this was a violation. And by the way, they seem completely in cahoots with us in trying to make this happen. So why are you coming to us? If this was illegal, nobody told us that. And so they would have lost the grievance. And so what he thought was, I've got two choices here. I can not offer immunity and not get any part of the story and still not be able to suspend anybody. Or I can offer immunity. I can't suspend anybody, but now I get the story, and the sort of tarnished reputation of players is not an insignificant, you know, sort of result for the player in all of it. So like I would have wanted players suspended too, but I completely understand why the commissioner chose to go the route he did, because he would have lost his grievances and nobody would have been suspended, and we wouldn't have gotten all the information available to us.
The one goofy comment was the calling of the World Series trophy. He called it a piece of metal.
Yeah.
Like, that was goofy.
Yeah, that was not a that was a blunder, no question about that, because it's not just a piece of hardware. It's attached to the World Series, and the World Series means everything to fans. It means everything to players.
Everyone in baseball.
Yeah, that was. Look, he's. I think for the most part, the commissioner is not tone deaf. Like, he's hearing the complaints out there, and he explained why he chose to go the way he did. He explained why he didn't penalize Jim Crane more than he did. And you know, but calling that for the World Series. Here's the thing: what the Astros should do is, without anybody telling them, they should take down every banner in the stadium, any recognition of the 2017 World Series, and it, out of acknowledgement that nobody's, you know, they're not vacating it. The league's not going to vacate it. The commissioner's not going to vacate it. But what they can do is say, you know what? It was tainted. We cheated. We understand what everybody thinks. We're not going to celebrate it. We're going to go out there and play straight and see what we can do to try to win another one. I think that would allow everybody to go, okay, you know what? They finally stink and hurt us here, and finally are acknowledging in the right way the impact of this. The idea that it didn't help. They hit 18 home runs at home in the postseason, 9 on the road. And they're thinking that it doesn't impact the game. I don't buy it for one bit.
No, it's a lie. I mean, they know they're lying, but that's the whole point. Is they're holding on for dear life to the World Series.
Yeah, and if you listen to that owner's presser, he is not doing
what that's all he cares about.
Yeah, he's not doing what he just mentioned.
No, and he's catering to his market. He couldn't care less if people in New York don't like him.
No.
You know, Altuve can walk into the Bronx and get booed, walk into the Rogers Center or Fenway or whatever. Jim Crane's not walking out on that field.
No.
So he couldn't care less. He cares about his own market. And I'm sure they're embarrassed down in Houston, but they're still going to celebrate. They're still going to sell out. And if they go back to the playoffs this year, it'll be a sold-out Minute Maid Park. I guarantee you that. That's all he cares about.
Yeah.
And Manfred works for him. So what's Manfred going to do? I mean, he's been neutered, effectively.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Like Jim Crane said, I don't think I should have been punished. Now, I think that he has been in some way. General manager got suspended. His organization lost draft picks. He got fined $5 million, the maximum on the system. And their reputation is tarnished. There's no question about that. The reason Rob Manfred chose not to do more than that was because Jim Crane actually did something that is somewhat uncommon, is that when he got the information about the Red Sox cheating and the edict from the commissioner, he went to Jeff Luhnow and said, hey, make sure your guys are following the rules with this thing. I don't want any problems with it. Like, he actually did the right thing and went to Luhnow. Now, Luhnow didn't do the right thing and didn't filter it down, at least from every indication that we have so far, did not filter it down. I think that the Altuve, I heard somebody make a really good point. I think it was Susan Slusser, who writes from the San Francisco Chronicle, made a really good point that, you know, Correa defended Altuve, that Altuve didn't, you know, cheat. He didn't want the garbage can banging. And Altuve, I thought, did the right thing by apologizing and accepting responsibility that he didn't speak up. The one thing to remember, you know, because, you know, Cody Bellinger and others have said, well, he stole an MVP from Aaron Judge. And everybody said, no, he didn't cheat, But he did receive the benefit of the other guys who cheated, who were on base that he could drive in runs, that got hits that drove him in, that led to his numbers being enhanced. And so the traffic on the bases was enhanced because the other guys were cheating. And where Altuve didn't directly want the garbage can bang to know what pitch was coming, he was a real beneficiary of the other guys cheating in the process.
with Steve Phillips, our MLB analyst. So the Jays officially report today. They had their first official workout today. We were talking about this earlier. I'll pose it to you. You give me an answer, whoever pops into your mind. When I use the phrase, the face of the Blue Jays franchise, who do you think of first?
Yeah, Bo Bichette.
Yeah. That's what we all say.
Yeah, I do. And it's okay. You know what? It actually is, it's okay that for Vlad Jr. to just be able to sort of go out and play and not worry about personality or anything else and just perform. I actually sort of think that that's a pretty interesting dynamic there because Bichette's got the swag, right? He's got the look. He's got the pizzazz. He's got sort of the cool where Vlad's sort of the baseball player. I think it's actually good for both of them that they're sort of assuming those different roles.
Yeah, I would agree. I think there's a language barrier as well. I mean, it's an arbitrary title. It doesn't necessarily mean anything. And Vladdy goes out there and wins MVPs and just lights up the league. He's going
to
get a ton of love.
Bombs. And Bo Bichette can be the emotional leader.
Yeah.
He can be the voice in the clubhouse. And he can be the go-to guy like Jeter was for the Yankees.
Yeah, right, Jeter, right. Because Jeter wasn't the best player on the Yankees many years.
Right.
But he had the longest shadow. I mean, never forget when Alex Rodriguez got traded over to the Yankees and Alfonso Soriano goes down to Texas and they get that deal done. And Alex Rodriguez is going to play third base and Jeter's at shortstop. And I remember going out watching the games early in that first season. I thought, you know what? It doesn't matter. Rodriguez is a much bigger guy than Derek Jeter, but Jeter's shadow is much longer than Alex Rodriguez. Just that sort of presence that he had about him, I think, cast a broader shadow than A-Rod, even though he was the much bigger physical specimen.
With Steve Phillips, speaking of that position, really difficult news over the weekend up here. Tony Fernandez passing away at the age of 57, suffered a stroke a while ago, was dealing with kidney issues for quite some time. One of the great Jays of all time, leading them in games played, you know, hits across the board. He's top five, top 10 in almost every significant stat, including being on that 93 team. When you think of Fernandez, you know, we were throwing around the way he used to throw, his stance.
Right.
There's a lot that made him quite unique. But as a baseball fan yourself, what was your take on Tony Fernandez?
Yeah, he was just slick. He was cool. I played against him in the minor leagues. I was in instructional league in 1981, I guess it was, in St. Petersburg, Florida. We're playing, you know, in Dunedin, the Blue Jays were there. And I remember hearing about him. And then we go in to play them in instructional league. And there was this thing about him where he would, if you went in for a double play, they kept saying to me, be careful when you slide, be careful when you slide, because he'll step on you. Like he would try to step on you when you went in there for a double play with, you know, and he'd try to lift up his spikes and so, you know, so nobody would go after him. You were worried about being the base runner that he was going to go after you. You know, he had a little bit of time with the Mets organization too during the course of his career. And, you know, what I thought was so neat was, you know, when in doubt, he went back to Toronto. You know, he'd move around a little bit, but when in doubt, he'd go back to Toronto. There was always a place there for him, or always a home for him. And, you know, he just was such a slick player, solid baseball player. Remember, I think with the Indians, what was it, in 97, he had made a big error in the game of the World Series there. But, you know, and it was devastated by it. But just a real professional and a guy appreciated by his teammates and opponents as well.
Yeah, you're right. Four separate stints here in Toronto with the Jays, leading to 12 total seasons. And ranking number one in games played, number one in hits, number one in triples, third
number one
in doubles.
In war for a position player, the
right.
Top war of any career war for any player for the Jays.
Yeah, off the charts.
Impressive.
Like nobody at that position either. And that's something that Bichette, I'm sure, will get to at some point if he continues to trend the way he's trending. But like Marco Scudero is the only other guy that's even in his range, if you can believe it, in wins above replacement. Anyway, we're off and running down in Dunedin and throughout baseball, so we'll be doing this a lot more in the future. Always great having you on. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks for having me, guys. A lot of fun being back.
There he is, Steve Phillips, our MLB analyst, Blue Jays analyst.
Happy Family Day.
Happy Family Day, Steve. President's Day.
Yes, President's Steve. Day.
Not for us.
No. The Florida Panthers got a win today. You've been tracking that, Noodles, but 5-3. The Islanders lost again.
But like I was saying before, I'm just looking at the schedule. So tomorrow, for example,
losses, huh?
Columbus plays Philly. So one of those teams are getting 2 points. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a 3-point game. Like that's the challenge you start running into is those opponents out of the Metro down the stretch. You end up playing, you know, sticking closer to home. Now they're playing each other.
Right. Right.
So that's, you know, Carolina's in Nashville, so you got to track that one. But it's scoreboard watching. That's what you're doing.
Well, the Leafs have 22 games to go. Six of them are against the Panthers, Carolina, the Islanders, Columbus. Yeah. Two against Florida, two against Carolina, one against New York, one against Columbus. That's your world. You're not catching Tampa or Boston. You're not, you know, putting yourself in a position with Pittsburgh or Washington, or on the flip side with, you know, the Rangers or Montreal or whatever. You're going to be in that lane for a month and a half.
Yeah.
And let's see what you got. You're going to play basically every other night.
Tampa's won 10 in a row. Like that, I don't think that's quiet. You just forget they've won 10 games in a row, and even before that loss, there was another like nine. Like their record in the last like 24.
They're just doing what they did last year. They're making it.